trucking on. And I'm trucking on. Move her on down the line, another town will do me fine. I'm trucking on. I'm trucking on.
Howdy, friends, and welcome to Trucking On. I'm your host, Ward Richmond. I really appreciate you tuning in today, and I hope you enjoy the show. Shannon Johnson.
Hey.
Welcome to Trucking On.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
So glad you're here. Your partner in crime, K-Rod, was on here recently.
Yeah, she's the best.
And she just immediately emailed my assistant and said, Jasmine, we need to get Shannon on as soon as possible. And we never even discussed. I never even asked you to do it. She just brokered the whole deal. And here you are.
Well, to be fair, I'll do anything for K-Rod. And I've known you for years. So I'll do anything for you too.
I'll do anything for you.
Thanks, man.
And then, like, the way the universe works, we randomly saw each other a week ago at the truck yard. And we hung out all afternoon.
Yeah, it was great.
And got to do like a little pre-work for this.
Because I was nervous.
Were you?
I mean, I'm just better when it's not like a formal conversation, you know?
No video today.
Yeah, that was good for me.
I asked the videographer, Logan, but he's out of town and I figured we can just do it without video.
Yeah.
And we can just, you know, we're wearing our Hawaiian shirts.
So that's right.
Nobody will see.
And I get a free sticker.
You do get a free sticker. I got sparkly rainbow stickers.
They're, I'm here for it.
They're old school.
Give you one on my Yeti cup.
Yes, that's what I do. And let's get going.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, I always like to talk about how we know each other, but you were an intern when I worked at Transwestern.
That's right.
When in 08, 09, somewhere in there?
2010.
10? Yeah. I was there from 08 to 2012, and then I went to Colliers.
Yeah, it was 2010.
You were a great intern. I was never at the office,
so
we never interfaced.
You would call and be like, can you run a search real quick?
Yeah, I'd have you run some searches.
For like a couple of weeks, and then you came in, and I finally was like, oh, that's the guy I've been talking to.
Yeah.
I feel like I know you, but I didn't know you.
I'm bad sometimes at like remembering faces, but I really remember you came up to me like as if we're old friends at a broker event years later when you were at Cushman.
And
like, Ward, how are you? Give me, it was your broker event. It was a big 600,000 foot building in Fort Worth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
Procter & Gamble was in there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was like, who is this friendly person hugging me? It's like, oh, I put two and two together. It took me a second.
It's our little intern.
Little intern all grown up.
Yeah.
Cushman & Wakefield power broker. And now you run the Dallas, Texas region for SRS Industrial?
Yes. DFW for SRS Industrial.
Nice.
Yeah. Kind of full circle because when I was interning with Transwestern, that was under Brandt.
That's right.
And so when I was contemplating leaving Cushman, Brandt and I started chatting and then here we are.
The world of commercial real estate.
That's right.
And then K-Rod works there.
That's right.
You're my third SRSer on this podcast.
So you've had K-Rod, Brandt, me.
That's right.
Okay.
All the heavy hitters. I need to get David Pencil on.
Yeah, you do.
Next.
You do.
He's on the list. Whenever I go to LA, I ask him to be on it. And this guy is playing pickleball every time I'm in LA. He's like, sorry, I'm playing pickleball. Like, bro.
Yeah, he's like,
you have a problem.
He's a pro now, apparently.
Is he? I mean, he's doing it like at a level of like where he doesn't hang out with me anymore. So I'm kind of worried.
And he's doing pickleball deals.
Oh, like brokering pickleball courts?
Yeah.
That's insane. Pickleball is taking off. I kind of like won't accept it.
Have you played?
No.
I'm pretty bad.
I kind of played with my kids one time when we were at this like resort place that had it, but they weren't too into it. So we ended it quickly.
So it saved you.
I had my chiropractor came on, Blake Wu, and he told me that his business has gone up since pickleball was created.
Sure.
Because people get drunk and play pickleball and they get injured.
Yeah.
They go see Blake, Dr. Wu. So I know a little about you.
Yeah.
I love hanging out with you. I know that. I know you're a great real estate broker, but I'm curious to dig in. another podcast guest, Jason Burt, you went to high school with.
Yeah, we grew up in the same up north, Carrollton, Plano area. We both went to Hebron.
Yeah.
We were both athletes in school. And I think he was like into skateboarding, right?
That's what he said.
Okay.
It makes sense. He looks like a skateboarding type. Yeah,
he does. He does. But we both went to Hebron, same class.
He's a large skateboarder.
Yeah. And he was like in all AP classes, right? I feel like he was real smart.
He's very smart.
Okay. I like didn't carry my books. So. Yeah.
Me neither. I was the same.
Yeah. I was like, I don't want to carry the book bag. I don't want to deal with the books. But Jason was really smart.
I would never expect that of Jason until I've really like knowing him like at a glance, how I used to know him, like just kind of around the music scene. But now that we've been working together for a couple of years, like I can totally see that.
Yeah.
He is a big time nerd and a very hard worker.
Yeah, but he's smarter. He
pretends like he's not. Though,
I agree.
But he's undercover.
Like an intellect, like, maybe.
Yeah, like mental assassin. Yeah. So that's, I mean, his success.
Watch out for Jason.
His success is definitely reflects that. So let's go back to age 12. And then you can tell me about your upbringing. What happened? 12 to 22.
Okay. I feel like I had a pretty normal upbringing, but again, grew up Plano, Carrollton area, and I have a sister, and we're 14 months apart. So we're like Irish twins.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. She's my best friend in the whole world. And we both played softball, which is like kind of our path, kept us like in a straight line, I think. I pitched and she caught.
Oh, wow.
So we got to
the dream team.
Yeah, the dream team.
The Johnson sisters.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like the Kavanaugh sisters.
Yeah, just the Johnston girls. And yeah. We had the whole tire in the backyard and I had to pitch into the tire to make sure it was a strike when my dad was at work. So finally I was like, you should be a catcher because then you can catch and I can pitch.
And I don't have to just talk to the tire.
That's right. And so we lived on a cul-de-sac and we were out there all the time, pitching, catching. But our family is real close. So my mom and dad, obviously both worked, but...
They both worked.
They did. I think when we were going into middle school, my mom stopped working.
Okay.
But when we decided we wanted to like, you know, charge ahead, full court press, play softball. My dad was like, well, you're not going to be shitty. You know, you need to like really work hard. And so we did all the lessons. We were on Team Texas. We traveled to Houston every Saturday. We'd wake up like 3 a.m., drive down to Houston, practice all day, drive back Saturday night. And so Taylor and I got super into it. She was better than me though. She's stronger than me. And she's just stronger than me. She has more grit than me, I think.
Like mentally and physically stronger?
Or? Yeah. 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 I can be like more bratty.
Okay.
Sometimes I'm like, okay, this is kind of dumb. I'm out.
Yeah.
And Taylor has a lot of grit. She's stronger than me. So she caught, I pitched. We did that growing up. Taylor got a scholarship and played for North Texas. So she caught there and played outfield there. I got a scholarship, graduated high school, got a scholarship and played in Maryland. So I moved to Maryland.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah.
Maryland.
Towson
Where?
University. Go Tigers.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a D1 up in Maryland, right outside Baltimore.
Yeah.
Towson University. And you know Michael Phelps grew up in Towson?
I did not know
Fun
that.
Fun fact. And so I pitched there for 4 years. And then when I graduated, we played in our last like playoff game.
Yeah.
And then I played overseas for the Swedish National Softball Federation.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I just took my bags and went to Europe for a little over almost 6 months, I think, and played one season over there.
What's softball culture like? Do you guys party a lot? It seems like
Yeah.
There might be some partying.
We did not party, yeah.
Yeah.
And Towson was kind of a party school because you got Johns Hopkins, which is like a bunch of doctors and really smart people. And Towson's just a public school. So everyone would come to Towson and party.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were you in a sorority or anything?
Just athletics was kind of our sorority / fraternity. Guys, girls, you know, we didn't hang out with general students.
No.
Yeah, only athletes.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah. And our softball team was, I mean, it was so fun. Those 4 years, I probably learned more in 4 years than I did anywhere else, right? Because I moved so far away. So you're by yourself. I was pitching. which takes a lot of work, right? Because kind of got the weight of the team on your shoulders. But I just learned a lot being out of my comfort zone in Dallas, Texas, with like, you know, Little House on the Prairie family.
Like culture shock going up there. I did the same thing. You know? I went to Providence, Rhode Island, but didn't know anyone.
Exactly. And like here, we don't realize that it's a, this isn't politically correct, but that we grew up, or I grew up in the Bible Belt, and we don't realize our community, and not everywhere is like that.
Right.
Where I went up to the Northeast and it was shocking.
I had never met a Jewish person before until I went to Brown, and my roommate was Jewish.
Yeah, I had two Jewish friends in high school, but I was like,
I didn't really know what it was. I was like, what is Jewish? Yeah. And I had no clue, like just growing up here, and we truly lived in a bubble. Mm-hmm. And I went to Woodrow, so I went to public school, inner city public school. Yeah. So I got exposure to all that stuff. But then at Brown, none of that existed. Like it was another bubble of its own, but it was just a different bubble.
Yeah. How big is Brown?
Like 6,000 people, I think.
Okay.
So probably like the size of your high school. Hebron's right. Pretty big high mm-hmm. school. Yeah.
That's right. So what took you to Brown?
Football.
And you played there?
I played for 1 year, but I got recruited there to play football. I got injured and then I stayed there and graduated.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. And, it was tough when I moved up there, like not knowing anyone. Mm-hmm. And then the only people I knew were on the football team, but I was really like sitting in the trainer's office, like pulled my Achilles tendon the first day of 2-a-days. So you start off it was just like God telling me football's over, buddy. And then my shoulder dislocated and it just sucked. And then you quit football. That was depressing. And then I didn't know anyone.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like I belonged at an Ivy League school because the only reason I got in was because of football. So I had a lot of things to work through.
Yeah.
That I did with alcohol. And then everything was okay for a few years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I joined a fraternity. I found like a social life through that. And I had a lot of fun. I played rugby my last 3 years. So
I read that.
I got into that. So
I think the same when I went up to Towson, but the team, it became like, it's automatically when you walk in that locker room, I didn't know anyone, but I had to trust them. And we were all so different from all over the country. From Washington State, from California, from New Jersey, from Delaware, from Canada, from Texas. And all of a sudden we just decided we all made the same choice to come here. So you trust each other. I'll do anything for you. And I didn't even know them, right?
Yeah.
And that camaraderie and that trust is hard. I tell everyone it's hard to recreate. And so when it was all over, you're like, what do I exist for? What do I do? You walk around campus and you're just like the picture of the team and that's kind of your existence. And so when I left, it was the same. I struggled to real estate was fun and stuff, but it's really hard to recreate that team. And everyone says like, oh, I've got your back. But like, do they?
Do you really?
Yeah. Like I was 18 and walked into a locker room and it was like, these people chose.
And they did have your back.
They did. Yeah. And they had to, because if one of us failed, we all kind of failed. And, I was thinking about it the other day, like when we're out recruiting and hustling and, you know, we get so busy in real estate and we get so wrapped up in it, close deals, make money and all these things that the team we have like at SRS, I think about it when I recruit and bring people onto the team, is that it's a cool chance to like create that again, right?
Yeah.
Like you can go recruit the $18 million producer, but like, do you want to like show up every day and see those guys? And finally, after so long, I guess I graduated in 2010. Like I just love my team so much. I would literally do anything for them, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
It's free therapy, right? Because they're my guys.
Money, I don't think can buy that type of happiness. It's like, sure, make the money, but.
True.
Is there really an $18 million producer that you know? That's pretty hefty.
Yeah.
Impressive. I know people there must be someone who's done that, but wow. I would just retire.
It's not me.
I'd retire after that year.
You know what? Enough. Yeah.
Moving to Hawaii.
That's right.
So true. And creating that culture has been my favorite part of doing my job is building my own little team within Colliers, and we're like a family and they're, I spend more time with them than anyone other than my actual family.
That's what I always say is that I do. I spend more time with in the office or with our guys or talking about work, family, personal with my team than I do with anyone else.
We're so fortunate in this job. And really it's just because we took the risk to go mm-hmm. work a job like this, right? And where you have the opportunity to create that culture,
right?
That and you get to choose. Here's what I'm going to do. I think so many people get lured in by the golden handcuffs of a salary and one of those types of jobs, which then you work for the man, basically, in this big corporation where you don't have control over the culture and you don't really have control over your destiny. You're just having to answer to these higher ups, but doing what we do can really just do whatever you want.
That's right.
It's beautiful.
And you get like it's so fluid because every day you get the choice, like money makes people do weird shit. Are you allowed to cuss on this?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I get it. You know, people have to pay for private school tuitions, all these things that everyone gets wrapped up in and is committed to, right? And so money makes people do weird shit. And so every day you get the choice to like, at a young age when I got in the business, right out of school at whatever was I, 22 probably, mm-hmm. like you have that responsibility to do the right thing or not. And so I think it's really cool that at a very young age, you get to start making adult decisions that people sometimes don't make until they have kids, till they're in their 30s, till they're way older. It was very young where you're like, I remember getting in the business. My dad was just like, you know, I repeat this all the time, but the good thing is nothing lasts forever. The bad thing is nothing lasts forever, you know? So when you close a big deal, like just act like you've been here before and move on. And when you don't, when you lose a deal, move on, you know?
Move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stuff comes and goes. But I think that's really cool about our business too, is that you get to control what's ahead.
And the mental warfare that you have to go through to get adjusted to this way of living is, I think it helps out in all things in life too.
I agree.
And I was just talking to a guy on the phone, a developer, and he has one big vacancy and it's just sitting there and it's been sitting there for a year. I am now a developer and built this building in South Dallas and we're vacant right now. And I've struggled at times when I get in my head about it, but I've been doing this long enough to know just, you got to get out of your head and you got to do the work and work the process and know that, I mean, I just have faith in the universe that it will provide me with what I need.
That's
and
right.
When it doesn't, it's typically trying to teach me some lesson. And then I just have to learn the lesson. But everything's going to be okay one way or the other.
We're not brain surgeons.
I surrender the worst possible outcome, which is what my mind is great at making up very quickly. Like, here is the absolute worst shit that's going to happen. And then it's like, okay.
I'm not going to die.
What if that does? Yeah, I'm not going to die.
Yeah.
There will be another day. And then I can do better and not make that mistake, whatever it may have been, again. And that's day in, day out.
How is your activity on the South Dallas building?
Fantastic, actually.
Yeah.
That helps me sleep. We just had a tour today. We've been having tours every week. We've got two great proposals on the table that would take the whole building. So
I like it.
Bring it on. You told me you might have somebody for it.
Yeah.
Bring it on. How's your building going? You're leasing it up. I'm a partner in the building you're leasing.
Yeah. So we're good. We just, we leased the west side in the middle. So now we have the frontage off 45 to lease.
How much? Like 70?
79.
That's a good spot.
Yeah.
Ready to go. Office is ready.
Office is ready. Make ready office. Come tour. We've got Diet Cokes and water.
Hutchins?
What do you think? Yeah, Hutchins.
Diet Coke. It's not good for you.
Yeah.
No.
A lot of things aren't good for me, Ward.
That's true.
I'm still going to do them.
Someone told me romaine lettuce is not good for me. I was on a date and I was having a Caesar salad and this woman said, you know that's unhealthy, right? I was like, lady,
sober.
It's a fucking lady? Caesar salad.
So how did it end?
I'll be fine. We were just friends after the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bye.
Yeah.
Right after she started dissing the Caesar salad. Like, well,
it's delicious.
If Caesar salads are bad, then I'm in big trouble.
Yeah. I'm never going to make it in your environment.
Yeah. It's like you should have seen what I did for the first 20 years of my adult life. And then you would know that a Caesar salad is like...
Well, when I was at Transwestern, you were in a band, mm-hmm. right? That's when you were like at your prime party time.
I was at my prime party time. Well, I played in the band only, and I like worked in restaurants and fast food until I was 27.
Okay.
So that was really prime time. That was where my shift at the All Good Cafe was 11 a.m. to 3 when I was in town and not touring and playing every night. So we played 200 shows a year. And that was wild. And I stopped doing that in March of 06. So when you met me, I was still living that life. I was playing a lot of shows still. I played a lot of shows until Betty was born, and then it started really tapering off. So, and that was 2014. So 2010, I was rolling hard for sure.
Yeah.
I was doing real estate, but yeah, every weekend I was playing shows and I was going out pretty hard. So you recall that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Was I known as like the party guy?
Yeah,
I think I was.
Yeah, you were Ward.
I was proud of it. I wasn't like ashamed of it. I thought it was actually a superpower.
It kind of is. Yeah, to be fair, it is. Yeah, I can do it.
I was good at it, and like I never got in fights. I always woke up and went to work, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you're a gamer.
Yeah, and yeah, when I quit drinking, I was like, oh my God, that is. I started going to real estate conferences and like noticed that like 15% of the people there get absolutely obliterated at real estate conferences. And the rest of people are like drinking two drinks and actually working. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe what I've been doing the last 10 years. But, now I'm much more settled down.
Yeah. It's good luck on you.
There's people that I meet now that I've met over the... I mean, it's really... I've been living this new lifestyle, let's say, since 2015. So it's been a while, like 8 years. And there's so many people I met during this course of this 8 years that never knew me when mm-hmm. I was a really hard partier. And they think of me as like the Tony Robbins guy or the yoga meditation guy. It's so funny because I'm getting there now where I think of myself that way. But for many years, I was like... Still thought of myself as
yeah. Well, you know all facets of you, you know. So
yeah, and that used to be like my familiar self was the hard partying Ward for probably like 5 years until after I quit drinking. So anyway, I digress. Anything else you want to hit on in those young years? I mean, we're kind of already moving into real estate. So, what was your first job out of college? Where did you go to Cushman?
I interned at Moore Partners.
Okay.
And then I interned with y'all at Transwestern.
Had lots of Moore Partners people on here too. It's a good little program to
go
through.
It was great. I learned a lot and I met a lot of people. And they, the people at Moore Partners helped me get my resume out to everyone in Dallas.
That's cool.
Which is how I landed at Cushman. So... You know, I'm thankful for them.
Yeah.
And then I landed at Cushman. Yeah.
And
8 years.
8 years at Cushman.
I partnered with Mark Collins and Gary Collette, and they are just like rock solid. I just love those guys. Mike Wyatt and Steve Everback hired me.
Rest in peace, Mike Wyatt.
I know. I just ran the marathon on Sunday for Mike.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
It was Levi's birthday. Otherwise, I would have done it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the Polar Plunge.
On the 6th.
Yeah.
Okay, me too.
January 6th.
Yeah, Mike's the best.
Yeah, I worked with him at Cushman before Transwestern. I worked with him for like 9 months.
Okay.
And it's my second job after Jeff Mercer at Robert Lynn. Then I went to Cushman, worked with Mike for like 9 months. But at that point in time, I was like almost 30 years old and he needed like, a young buck to be running surveys and doing pro calcs. And I was like ready to go rock and roll.
Yeah. Chase downs and stuff.
Yeah. But it's such a fun time. He came to my bachelor party. He like crashed it. He wasn't invited, but he showed up at Bob's Steak and Chop House and he brought me this Playboy coffee table book. And he just, you know how he is. And just was like, hey, what's going on? God, he called me Big Bear or something. He calls himself the Stallion. The Stallion's here. Like, gave me the book. And I was shit-faced. And I had actually just decided to leave. So I knew I was leaving Cushman, but he didn't know yet. Mm-hmm. So I was just like super, had lots of anxiety around this whole thing. But he gave me the coffee table book of Playboy, naked Playboy models, and Dirk Nowitzki sitting right next to our table. So I drunkenly went over to Dirk Nowitzki and asked him to sign it, the coffee table book, and to pick out the hottest girl in the book.
So did he do it?
He skimmed through the book. Like, he actually looked at many of the pages. And then he said, "Hi, Ward, this is the hottest girl in the book, Dirk, 41.
Do you have it?
Yeah, it's here somewhere.
Yeah, Mike's a legend.
He is.
The cool thing about Mike is that he always shows up. As you said, you know, he used to say that. You can do a lot of things wrong, and there's different ways to be successful in real estate, but you got to show up.
Oh, yeah.
And he's not wrong.
He's a machine. I had no idea that he struggled
with
depression. And
me either.
I wish I had known. I like sit here on my podcast. I talked about him already on my podcast multiple times. Like, I've got to get Mike Wyatt on here. He'd be so good.
He's so good.
So interesting. Most interesting man alive.
Yeah, he is. He's a Renaissance man.
He is. And then I've heard that news and it broke my heart because I sit on here and talk about like anxiety and depression and all this stuff all the time. I had no idea he was going through it.
I know.
He hit it so well. It reminds me of like comedians that you know, like that take their lives or die of a drug overdose. And it's like, what? They're the funniest person that you can, like a Robin Williams or something.
Yeah.
Like,
he lit up every room. He was the guy, you know, I would never have thought that.
No.
Poor Piper.
Oh, yeah. So much love to her and to Big Mike, the Stallion.
Yeah, the Stallion.
So, Cushman, did you start off like cold calling? Did you just get after it?
Cold calling.
Yeah. In person or on the phone?
Both. Yeah.
Did you pick a submarket or did you just kind of go free for all? Do you have any strategy behind it?
No.
A lot of youngins listen to this, like who are thinking about getting into commercial real estate.
I would not recommend this, but I did not have a strategy. But I feel I work better sometimes when my hair's on fire. I need a little disorganization. I need a little kick in the ass. I'm not like one of those people that looks at spreadsheets too long. So it was not organized. I don't recommend that if you're young and trying to get in the business. But I met with all the brokers on the team. And I met with Mark Collins and he said, like, let's just chase down big box deals. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to hit on all of DFW, anything. I think I put in some search for like 250,000 square feet or above.
Yeah.
And so that's.
Go after the big bombers, right. Basically.
Like, and when looking back now, it's like, probably not a good idea, but like, you're going to be shitty anyways. So you might as well. No. Accidentally land a big deal, then accidentally land a small deal, right?
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
It takes just as much effort, really, to go get hired by one of those big tenants as it does the small ones.
Right.
And then and it's like the smaller ones are tougher. It's funny how we get paid. We don't get paid hourly for like clients being a pain in the ass. We just get paid on deal size. But 9 times out of 10, it's funny, you do a 1 million square foot deal, you get paid a shitload of money. A 1 million square foot deal is like the easiest deal to work on.
Right, sophisticated tenant.
Every landlord begging you for the deal. Like it's just easy peasy. Like go do a 20,000 foot last mile deal in LA and it's like your hair is going to fall out and you get paid peanuts for it.
Right, yeah. So that was, I guess it was a strategy, but in my head.
Not peanuts, but you know what
I mean. Right, yeah. Like,
comparatively.
I guess it was a strategy, but not really. I was just literally just trying to just make
it. I like that strategy.
Yeah. I had to move in with my parents. I was living at home. I had no money. It was like that thing when like your mom goes to Target or something and she's like, do you need any shampoo? And you're like, yeah, I do. You know,
please.
I was kind of a charity case. Yeah. And I'm on a draw. So I'm essentially paying Cushman to go there every day.
Yeah. You're paying interest.
Right. And so it was.
You had to go big or go home.
That's right. At that point, I was like, tell me what to do and I'll do it.
You're already home.
Yeah, and I was home. Yeah. Yeah. Every day I was home. Yeah. So that's where I started.
Hell yeah. And 8 years doing industrial deals. Any other highlights from work? This is less about really this podcast is more about life, and I like that we've already covered so much, but any other commercial real estate tidbits? Why did you leave and go to SRS?
When I started at Cushman, we weren't public, and two, we operated kind of as our own, LLC or entity in the Dallas office.
Texas, yeah, North Texas.
Right, and so when we got a commission agreement signed, anything signed, we just took it to Steve Everback's office and he signed it. And then it, turned into we're sending these to New York, then we went public, then it was sent to Chicago. There was a lot of more red tape. Mm-hmm. And but also you kind of like, it was good. Cushman was a good place for me. And then I realized I kind of wanted a little bit more nimble, entrepreneurial atmosphere and vibe. And this year at SRS, it's our first full year at SRS. It'll be my best year. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, I love it. I just like, it's more exciting to get up in the morning. And I just feel like you said earlier, I just do whatever I want, but obviously do the right thing by people. Correct. And things like that. But I think I was drinking the Kool-Aid I thought in my head I had to be at a big shop.
Yeah.
And it's not the Kool-Aid. It's just,
I don't know anyone else who thinks like that. Weird.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's all of Dallas. Even when I'm talking
to you. I know exactly what you mean.
I always say, like, if you're in real estate and you can bust your ass and you can work hard and you've got, you're tenacious and you've got, I think it really is a bunch of grit, but you can be at any shop and make a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
And you can also not do any of those things and be at a big shop and make not very good money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I left Cushman on good terms. Again, I love all those guys. Mark Collins, we partnered for years and he's on top five guys in my life. I love Mark Collins.
I need to get him on Trucking On.
Yeah.
We just were roommates at the CenterPoint trip.
Oh yeah?
We shared a little cabin together.
I called him when he was there.
Yeah.
I needed some information on something we were used to work on. And yeah. I called him when he was, y'all were roomies.
We were roomies. Yeah.
He's the best.
He is.
He's just such a solid dude.
He is.
He's salt of the
earth. World class.
I know he is. He just got remarried.
I heard.
I know. We went to the mall and got her a birthday present, a little Gucci bag.
Nice.
I know. Yeah.
What kind of bag do you have today?
Celine.
Okay. You were rocking a Gucci bag or Gucci boots.
Yeah.
Last time I saw you at the truck yard.
You're right.
Yeah.
Chanel. Yeah.
Chanel. Yeah.
You had the cool Vans on?
Two of the nines. Yeah. I had the Vans on.
Two pair? I remember.
Yeah. I bought two pair of the Vans. They don't have them anymore. That's why I bought two pair. I saw them and I said, these are going to last. I've been wearing the first pair now for like 4 years. So they're lasting. They're rugged. They're rugged. And I have the backup pair like ready to go.
Or Levi can wear them.
Yeah. I'll give them to Levi.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'll love them. So,
what else you got for me?
What advice would you give to your younger self?
Oh my gosh. How much time do you have? I was crazy. I'm crazy, but I think when I was younger, when I was younger, I would like have this plan, like super control freak. And if it didn't go that way, I thought the world was over.
Right.
And it was tough getting into real estate because every day
there's never a plan.
It's a shit show. Yeah. Like you have a plan and it's going to get fucked up,
You're like climbing a wall that's like flipping upside
down. You're swimming upstream every single day, right? And once you get used to it, you kind of like it because that makes it great. But in the beginning, I was like, here's my plan. I'm going to, I'd write it out. I'd show up to work and then nothing went according to plan. And I would get like anxiety about it, I'm never going to make any money. I'm not going to be good at this. And I think when I was first got in the business or my younger self, I would say, calm down. Again, Mark Collins told me like, you're not a brain surgeon, Shannon. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And that was good for me because I meant saving lives. No one's going to die. I might have to borrow more money from my parents, but we're going to be all right,
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. You'll get what you need.
Yeah. You just got to keep at it.
Mm-hmm. So what's the greatest obstacle you've had to overcome? Life or business?
It was hard for me to navigate when softball was over because that was 100% my identity.
When did 100%. You start playing?
When like I was when, 8.
Okay, so yeah, 8 years old to 22, basically.
Yeah, and when I was like 10, I'm like, I want to play in college and I want...
Is there a way to make money doing it? Is there like professional softball?
Yes. Like when I played overseas, that's professional. I say that in quotations. But like they pay for you to be there, but you're not... It's like penny. It's not nothing to write home about.
It was like I was a professional musician.
But you really were. Like you traveled and stuff.
I know, but
I was not making any money.
Yeah. We were breaking even, basically.
Yeah.
We were living the life.
That's right.
You know,
it was
and
really
that's
fun.
What you were doing, right?
Yeah, I was traveling all over Europe. I played in all the Euro Cups,
it's
Germany,
the same.
Prague. Yeah, it was great. But, you know, after a season, it's like,
yeah,
we got to decide here.
Yeah, you got to go.
Yeah, I had to
do the thing.
I had to hang the cleats up. Yeah, but that it was just.
Do you play like club softball? Did you do that when you got back? It seemed someone just
like
mentioned
barely.
They're in a softball league.
Yeah, I couldn't really get into it. I mean, part of softball, don't you think about sports? It's like, of course, you love the sport. Like, I love the sport, love pitching. I love, but like, it's the camaraderie. I love the locker room. I love being the pitcher. I love the team thing. I love kind of the bullshit that comes with it. Like the sport, obviously I love it, but you know, to play in like those beer leagues, I would like, first of all, I was making no money. I'm in commercial real estate. And it's like, I can't leave at 5 to make sure I'm there on time.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, you played softball in college. You should be better than that. And it's like,
yeah.
I'm not like going to lose my kneecap for this beer league.
I don't think I realized that until recently, but yeah, I don't think I ever really liked playing football, but I loved being on the football team.
That's what I mean. Yeah, loved like
I love wearing my jersey to school on Fridays and like going to the pep rally and being like, I'm a fucking football player. I only wanted to go play college football so I could tell people I was playing college football.
Me too.
I swear.
Yeah. I mean, I do love the sport, but you're right. Yeah. Like if someone was like, I'll give you a scholarship and play whatever, I probably I'm like, all right, I'll be the man. I'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to wear the jersey. I like someone's name on the front. I like my number. It was 100% my identity. So when softball was over, that was hard for me.
Yeah. This is a new question.
Uh-oh.
Have you ever had a mystical experience?
I don't think so. Mystical. Like explain this to me.
I don't know. Like something that happens where you're like, you feel the presence of something greater than yourself. I've asked only one other person this question. And he answered it immediately. He said it was when he was playing football and he like got the ball and he's like running with the ball. He's like, that was a mystical experience.
I guess now that you say that, I didn't realize it. But when I was on the mound, I felt like I was by myself most of the time. You know, where it's just like, I felt like so powerful. That's weird. Also, I'm not that religious. So sometimes every day I'm like, because I'm just not that religious.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Every day when cool shit happens, I'm like, whoa, that's a cool sign.
Yeah.
But definitely when I guess now that I look back when I was pitching, I thought it's kind of silly, but in your head, you're like, I'm the man.
Yeah. You have that like powerful feeling.
Which is so like looking back, it's kind of silly, right? You're just out there pitching a yellow ball with red seams.
I think it's because you're like absolutely in the present moment.
Yeah, that's right.
And you're not thinking about anything else. And that's magic.
Yeah.
I've been like working on like trying to get in that state just like in normal life as much as possible. So I have like little methods of trying to do that.
Yeah. It's interesting. So do you think that it's like when people work on that, is it like a religious thing or is it just a mind well-being thing?
I'm like I'm not religious in the sense like I do take my kids to church sometimes, but I'm not religious and like, don't see myself as a religious person, but I am very spiritual. So I do believe in God and I pay attention to things that go around me and like, so I have a good relationship with God. So
yeah,
I think there's
same.
A difference between religion and spirituality. So I'm deeply spiritual, very much. I don't believe in like, I've never felt comfortable really in churches. I take my children because I want them to go get some schooling on like religion of some sort. But like going to the church is like overwhelming for me, the glad handing, the asking for the money, and like it's just a little much. I have a very personal relationship with God, which I like also incorporate nature into that. And just like how it's so personal, I think. Like,
I
think
agree.
Everybody has their own, the ability to have your own relationship with God. Everyone's unique individual. I know how I have mine. So
yeah. I believe in a higher power. It's different for me than it is for everyone else. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Do you know when I was a kid, I wanted to be a nun?
No. You would have gotten so much trouble in nun school, I feel.
Obviously, I would have got kicked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I honestly think that was one of those things where when you're a kid, you go to church and you see like, I wanted to be a priest. My mom's like, you can't, you're a chick. So I'm like, oh, I'll be a nun. Because like everyone watches them and they command the room. And when you're a kid, you want like, look at me, look at me.
Yeah. I actually think like Jesus would have been pro that. But this is just like the whole problem with religion is they take everything Jesus said and then they've like, manipulate it for the rest of the next 2,000 years to create a structure of power in a lot of cases. I'm not saying every church is like that, but in a lot of cases they are, and it made me feel uncomfortable. But I think Jesus would have been all fine with like a female leader in the church, you know, right?
Yeah.
Because he had lots of women in his crew, like Mary Magdalene and all of that. So.
Yeah.
As far as I know,
but it's good I didn't.
I wasn't there though, so I don't know. I feel like I
wasn't a part of that program.
I want to be. I try to live like the way Jesus lived. Like I want to. Like I don't know. I don't want to say I'm not a Christian because I do. I believe in Jesus, but I'm more focused on living a Christ-like life. If that makes sense.
That's what I would say. If your religion
versus
makes you hate someone,
following the rules of a church, I want to follow the example set by Jesus.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeshua, as he was known in Aramaic. I've been told by a psychic medium that's what he prefers to be called, is Yeshua.
You're a wealth of knowledge, Ward.
Is that weird or what? So, moving on.
Mm-hmm.
What's your morning ritual?
I'm an early riser. So I like to get up at like, my alarm goes off at 4:45, but I usually wake up about 4:30. And I like to chill for about 15 minutes. My dog, Stanley, Dyson Johnston, we like to chill for about 15 minutes, hang out.
Just hanging with Stan.
Just talk to him.
And Stan sure Johnson?
Stanley Edison Johnston. Yeah.
The real estate company.
Yeah. He's a man.
The Stan Johnson company.
He has a full mohawk, body mohawk.
Did you shave that or is it natural?
Kiki does his hair.
Okay.
Yeah, she comes to the house.
Okay.
He likes Kiki. And he got kicked out of PetSmart.
Who's Kiki?
His barber.
Okay, a traveling pet barber?
Yeah. Well, she works at PetSmart or she'll come to the house.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he got kicked out of PetSmart, so she has to come.
Yeah, Kiki.
Kiki, and so I like to chill with him. I'm a runner, but I like to run after work.
Okay.
So morning.
Where do you run?
Around my neighborhood.
Okay.
So I'm over like Knox Henderson area.
By Louise.
By Louise.
Right? Yeah, we were talking about
I like
that.
To run to Glencoe, a few laps, over the bridge a couple times, back home. But morning time is just like me time. And then I like to get to the office early so I have like quiet time at my computer.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Office every day?
I'm an office gal.
Yeah, cool.
I think I need it. Like I know this about myself. I thrive off of like discipline and it makes me feel better if I like stick to stuff. So I need to tell myself like go and I can check that box and it makes me feel like I accomplished that.
Yeah.
Like I wish I could just be like fluid and
yeah.
But I need like structure and discipline. Yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite hotel or vacation destination if you're not a hotel person?
Mm. I love staying in hotels. I
me
love
too.
When they like make the bed.
Oh yeah.
And the sheets.
You don't tell them to not change the sheets for the environment.
No,
they give you that option sometimes.
I'm not saving water animals. I'm like, no. We need all new every single
new
time.
Sheets. Yeah,
and even if the towels are like, yeah, I didn't really use it. I'll put it in the shower on the floor because I like the new crisp.
Get what you're paying for.
Yeah, when I was when I was a kid, my favorite place to travel was we loved going to New York City.
Oh yeah,
see the Rockettes. And see the Broadway shows.
This time of year is awesome.
Oh, it rocks. And then we stayed at the Waldorf Astoria. That was pretty bad.
Classic.
Yeah. I like stuff like that.
Yeah. I just took my kids there for the first time earlier this year.
So what'd y'all
October.
Do?
We went to Central Park. Yeah. We saw Back to the Future, the Broadway musical version, which was awesome. I'm a huge fan of that movie, and they just did its justice. It was fantastic. What else? One of my good friends lives there, so she let, you know, we brought the kids over there, and then I went out with her and her husband, some of my college friends, for like adult dinner night.
Yeah.
We went to some, like a kid's museum and did some shopping.
Yeah.
It was just like
New
perfect. Quintessential New York City trip.
Yeah.
Weather was perfect. So, yeah, I love a New York vacation. What's your favorite restaurant?
I'm not a foodie. I'm like all about the environment. So anywhere that has like a cool vibe, I'm into, but I'm not a big foodie.
Okay.
So like in Dallas, I could kind of care less, you know. I don't necessarily, I know it's super Dallas-y to like be seen. I don't necessarily need any of that, but.
You're seen by me.
Thank you, Ward. Do you know what restaurant I really love and I like wish that Dallas had a good one is when I lived in Maryland, there was a rotating sushi bar.
Oh yeah.
And I thought that was pretty rad. Like they come in different plates and then you stack them up and you pay by like the orange plate's most expensive or the green or.
And you just grab it.
Yeah. You just grab the whole plate.
I've done that a couple of times. Yeah. They don't have one here, do they?
I think they're
In like Richardson or something.
I agree, yeah. But it won't be like as cool. Like this was like in the middle of the city. It was pretty vibey. You could do the sake bombs. And that I think is a pretty, I think about that place often. Let me say that.
I loved a sake bomb back when I drank.
Yeah.
If I ever drink again, that'll be on my list of.
I haven't done that in forever.
Things to do. What's a book? Are you a reader?
Not a big reader, but. What's the golf one?
I don't know. The Tiger Woods story?
No. Forget. It's the last book.
Bagger Vance? The Legend of Bagger Vance?
Hold on. Dead Solid Perfect.
Oh, yeah.
It's like hilarious, kind of raunchy, has like just enough of everything in it.
Yeah.
But it's lighthearted. So if you fall asleep.
I've heard of that book.
You don't feel like at the end of every day, you're not like, I need to get 10 pages in. But you can pick it up. You can take it on the plane. You can read it on my couch.
Dead Solid Perfect.
Dead Solid Perfect. Yeah.
Do you remember who it's by?
No, but I'll send you a picture of it.
Okay. We'll put it in the show notes. Jose will find it.
Thanks, Jose.
Do you have a favorite quote?
Yeah, probably two. They're not famous, but my dad used to say, if he said it once, he said it 1,000 times, there's no free lunch.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Yeah. And so kind of just get your shit together and go work for, you know, when everyone thinks like, oh, I'll just do this. There's no free lunch. My dad used to say that a lot. I think about it a lot. And my mom used to say, everyone puts their pants on one leg at a time. Which is pretty grounding, especially in our business, right? You see all these people that are making a lot of money, have all these expensive things. And especially when we were kids, you always think like, oh my gosh, my friend's moving to the big bad house and all these things that you always think what everyone has, what everyone's parents do, the attorneys, the real estate, the hedge fund guys. And my mom used to say, everyone puts their pants on one guy at a time. And it's true. You never know what's going on. We all get dressed in the morning, brush our teeth, you know, and it's pretty grounding. I think about those a lot.
Yeah, everybody has shit going down. Like, nobody's living this, like, ascended life where they have no problems.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's nice to know. We're all in this thing together.
Yeah. So those would be my two, I think.
I just did a podcast episode that I don't know if I'm going to release, but I just ranted for 20 minutes about things. And I was talking just about like trauma basically. And it's like, yes, I'm like upper middle class, privileged, white, heterosexual male. And so was my degree of trauma inflicted on me as bad as like someone who grew up in the projects in Compton? Like likely not, most likely not. However, can that person do they feel that level of trauma in the same way that I feel my level of trauma? Because they're just used to it. So even though it's much heavier, much worse, like, does it still feel like kind of like equally as shitty? Like,
it's relative.
I think it's all relative. And I think everybody basically dealing with like some like level of shame and pain like that they're people are trying to deal with, and they're drinking or making shitloads of money to deal with it, or they're taking prescription drugs, or they're working out all the time. Like, people are trying to deal with fucking life, man. And it doesn't matter how much money you have. I have friends that have shitloads of money, and it's like, bro, you need to go to a yoga retreat with me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't trade places with some people, you know, that have levels of wealth that take care of multiple generations of my family, like, for anything, to seeing, like, sometimes, because the money doesn't matter. It's just like the money for a lot of people becomes a function of coping with the trauma.
Yeah, exactly.
Tony Robbins would say, address your fucking trauma.
I saw that he was in town recently, and I was like, I bet Ward is there.
I kind of wanted to go, but I did not. I had the JDRF one walk on that like weekend.
Oh yeah.
Which I chaired, and you guys sponsored. Yeah. I'm just agreed to chair it again next year, so we'll have to get you back.
I like it.
I'll call Brant. I'll get him when he's down at the ranch.
Yeah.
Call him around 10 p.m.
You know what to do.
Oh yeah. Speaking of which, well, yeah, I'll just ask you this. Is there a charity or cause that you donate money to? Or time, or that you're passionate about?
Yeah. You know, when we were younger with Mike, we had These Nuts. And now that's...
Oh, yeah.
We've added, incorporated into that the
Suicide These Nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's who we ran for. We had shirts and everything. And then we added suicide prevention to that. So,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Suicide prevention. I mean, that's, and it was testicular cancer was what he always raised money for.
That's right.
Because he had that.
Mm-hmm.
He was a survivor. What song would you like to share today? Are you big into music?
Yeah, I like music, but I don't have like a favorite. Growing up, you know what? We used to listen to James Taylor a lot. My dad plays the guitar.
Okay. Yeah.
I know. I don't strike you as a James Taylor girl.
No, not really.
Yeah. JT, my dad used to play the guitar every night before Taylor and I went to bed. So we know like every James Taylor song.
That's awesome. Just James Taylor songs is what he would play on the guitar?
And that's what we would request. Love it. And so I love James Taylor. But also, you know what I've been into lately? I've been running to a lot of Rihanna.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My daughter loves Rihanna.
I've really been into Rihanna.
So good.
Riri, I mean,
she's so cool.
Yeah, she's so cool. But it changes. Like, every week I kind of change my mood. And it all depends on how I feel. And then when I'm running, I just will play an artist. But Rihanna is my go-to right now.
I recently read a book, and it's about, like, the music hit-making factory. All these producers that write mega hits.
Yeah.
They're like behind the scenes songwriters, and they have these like songwriting factories to crank out these pop hits, and talking about how they had like Umbrella, and they found this girl, and like, you know, all of these super talented people are like waiting in line for these songwriters to like give them a song. And nobody ever knows, like, is this song going to pop or not? And hearing that whole story was so cool.
Yeah.
Like, her just being there, but she's just fucking cool.
Yeah, she is. She's raw, and I really like her. Have you seen that backyard bash with Miley Cyrus and her sister?
No, I love her too.
Me too. She is like...
You kind of have some Miley Cyrus vibes going on. You should.
Thank you, Ward.
Yeah, I feel like you could be her for Halloween or something.
Done.
Can you see it? You know what I'm saying? Like,
well,
you must.
I would never think of that, but I think she's so fucking cool.
Yeah.
And I know that she can be like,
I can see all this
off
hanging.
The beaten path a little bit, but you got to watch the Backyard Bash with her sister.
Oh, I will.
She rocks it. Her sister's pretty talented too.
Yeah.
But speaking of music,
Betty loves Miley Cyrus too.
Oh, I love that. I love Betty then.
Oh yeah. She's got great taste. She helps me write songs now.
Yeah, that's what you were telling me at Truck Yard.
Oh my gosh. It's really
amazing.
Does
she play the guitar?
She's learning to tune it. So we're taking it one step at a time. She's not big on taking lessons. She's so much like me. Like, she does not like to go do these. She's like, I'll teach myself when I'm ready, kind of a thing.
But I get
She started wanting to tune it. So I taught her how, so she practices. So one step at a time. If you had $100 million in a briefcase.
$100 million?
Yeah. What would you invest it in? Like, one, what asset would you invest it in if you had to pick one thing? It doesn't have to be like one building, but it could be like industrial real estate, or like, I'm going to invest it in oil, or I don't know, whatever.
I mean, I'm most educated in industrial real estate, so that would be safest to me, and because I believe in it. But if I could just like go off the charts, I honestly, and just be wild, I would just want to invest, like back some like big, like a big famous person, just to be crazy, travel around with them and be like, I hope you make it. Cause it's like kind of wild, you know?
So you would back someone before they became famous?
Yeah.
You would just set up like an audition.
Yeah.
Kind of like an American.
And
like,
you pick someone. Yeah. You have $100 million. You've got some room.
Yeah. Like Shannon's next top rock star.
Right.
And start like a little.
Only
contest.
Because it's fun.
I love that idea.
Just like, cause you can't do it if you just have normal money.
And then you sign them.
Once you have fuck you money, it's like, let's just travel around and hope they make it.
I love that idea.
Throw money at them. But yeah.
You just interview them all. They have to be like, meet all of your core values, have the talent.
Be kind of edgy.
Yeah.
Kind of fucked up, but like, do the right thing. Yeah.
Not like too hard into the hard drugs.
Right. But also listen to me because I want you to be successful.
Yeah.
But let's just go safe route. I would do industrial real estate.
Yeah.
Grow SRS. Then, that would be normal.
Yeah. I mean, once you invested $100 million in industrial real estate, then you would quickly have another $100 million
That's right.
to go do your pop star move.
Yeah.
What if you just like spent $100 million with you becoming a pop star?
The only thing is I can't sing. So
like this day and age, you got to be able to pay somebody to like make that happen. Like get some little chip in your throat.
Yeah, that's true.
There's got to be something.
I might have stage fright. Like I could sing in front of people I don't know, but people I do know, I'd be more nervous.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, because
I feel that. Like I don't like to do karaoke. I love playing guitar here at my house. My kids are listening. I don't care. They don't really like me to. They're not like you liking your dad to play guitar. They're like, please turn that down. That's what Levi will tell me. Will you please turn down the volume on that? Thanks, son. But I digress. Where was I going with this?
Guitar, pop star. I'm not a pop star.
If I have like friends over here, I guess when I drank a lot more, then we would like sit on the back porch and get fucked up and play guitar all night. Like that was different. But now I'm not as much of a performer here. But if I like played a show with boys named Sue, then it doesn't faze me. Like we're on a stage and I feel like there's some kind of layer between me and everyone else.
You're like in character.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that.
Let's see. What's number one on the vision board for 2024 or bucket list?
Vision board. For me, we're going to hire more people on our team.
Mm-hmm. How many?
I need to hire two more people on my team.
There you go. I like that.
Yeah. And you know, as much as anyone, it's hard hiring in Dallas because the CBs, the JLLs, the Cushmans are so big here and everyone is drinking the Kool-Aid, right? So we need substantial brokers that know what they're doing. And
what a great case study you are. You leave in your first year, you make more money than you ever made in 8 years of being at Cushman. Mm-hmm. There you go. I mean, look, I talk to Brant all the time. Like he was kind of in that system for a while when I worked with him at Transwestern, he was still in it. But then when he jumped and left Transwestern, I mean, he's just like gone to the next level. Same with Sharon and Summit Hogue. Like I have lots of friends that have gone and done this.
I will say when y'all
Conrad Madsen.
Yeah, I know, right? When y'all were a Transwestern night intern, I mean, that was like power team.
Oh wow. It was wild.
Yeah.
Brant, Sharon, Brad Strzok, Jim Hazard.
You.
me, John Clint. Fulton, Clint Riley, Brett Owens.
Brett Owens.
So many great brokers.
Henry
Knopik.
Like you just.
Bill De La Chapelle.
Yeah. Do you know when Billy you think D. about a team, when you think you've got like, you know, you hit every line, that was that.
It's a
that
really a good team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if you could pitch anything tomorrow, you would go, okay, it's Warden. This, you could yeah. tackle any client. That was a good team.
I was at Transwestern. I joined like months before Brant and Sharon came over from Staubach or JLL. And I always wanted to work at Staubach Company, but I didn't get hired there. Brant got hired for the job that I wanted out of college. And I'd interned there and I really wanted to get hired, but I was like a drunken intern. So they did not hire me.
They weren't into it?
No. And then I went on the road with my band and stuff and then started at Transwestern a couple years after that. And then they came on, but I was like, sweet, I get to basically work at the Staubach Company because Brant and Sharon are here. So
that's right.
That was cool.
And that's what Brant and I say every day when we're talking to people.
It's yeah.
like it's the same mentality and
And it is.
Culture.
I know it is because he's in charge and that's his deal.
Yeah. Brant's great. He's such a good, I mean, I love bouncing stuff off of him. He's got very sound thoughts when it comes to all of that, growing a business. And he's done it so many times, run a team, grow a team.
And it is very team oriented.
That's right.
And that's was the Staubach way. It's like everybody team on something. There's no like lone wolves going and doing their own thing. You need to always be partnering with somebody else.
Yeah.
And I love that. I still do it to this day.
Yeah, y'all do.
Mm-hmm. Where do our listeners find you, my friend?
What do you mean?
Where do they go to track Shannon Johnson down? LinkedIn,
Facebook, Insta. I have Insta. Shanny Pants. I have Instagram.
Thanks, Shannon Johnson, for trucking.
Thanks, Ward.
All right. Peace. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to this episode of Truckin' On. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, don't be shy. Please like, share, leave a 5-star review so that we can keep doing what we're doing. Stay safe out there on the road. Keep on truckin'.
So much shame when I share my little lies. No one left to blame until I stare into these eyes. I'm gonna tell the truth to you till I break on through to the other side. Living like I'm gonna die is the only time I feel alive. Living like I'm gonna die is the only time I feel alive. And I'm trucking on. I'm trucking on. Move on down the line. Another town will do me fine. I'm trucking on. I'm trucking on. And I'm trucking on. I'm trucking on.